Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. How you doing? If you're in the middle, or well, not the middle, but the beginning of Sober October, I hope it's going well for you. If you're making the decision that this is as good a time as any to ditch the booze, then absolutely go for it. Don't forget everything I've said about focusing on what you're gaining, not what you're giving up, because you're not giving up anything at all. And make sure that you get connected. If you are doing this and you are at the beginning of this journey, or maybe you've kind of gone around the block a few times and you're back at square one, it's extremely common. Don't beat yourself up. Then you might want to grab our free download about FOMO, all about the fear of missing out, and just some tips and ideas there for you. You've heard me say most of them lots of times. It will come down to making sure you're taking care of yourself, making sure you're eating well, making sure you're connected, and just recognizing that there's just so much to gain from ditching the booze. But because it is Sober October, there's lots of stuff going on, and that's fantastic. You know that my mantra is keep the ritual, change the ingredients. This is one of the things that happens to so many of us, that we, you know, we start off all great guns, and then the little voice in our head says, you know, something's not quite right here. And I remember that what makes me feel better is to drink alcohol and to have that lovely glass, that chilled liquid. And obviously, you know, we know that we like rituals as adults. We do. We like our, you know, to signify that time between work and relaxation or whatever it might be. And so it's completely fine to have that ritual, but just not with toxic liquid. So keep the ritual, change the ingredients. And to that end, I want to tell you about a great brand. I did this little cocktail making workshop, alcohol-free cocktail making workshop, online, obviously. And it was great. They sent me all the kit, and so I was able to kind of, you know, mix and blend, and it was really great. So I want to tell you about this great brand who offer a sparkling alternative without the alcohol. You've probably come across them. They're called Bell & Co. Because I really love the fact that they've got the little bottles as well as the big ones. And if you like your sparkling wine, you'll absolutely love this brand. It's 0%. And often, you know, when the alcohol is removed, particularly if it's sparkling wine, you can lose those aromatic top notes. You know, they kind of go along with the flavour, but nothing is stripped out of this one. It's crafted, they tell me, from bacterial fermented grape juice, and no alcohol is formed as a byproduct in the yeast fermentation. And apparently it's a centuries-old technique which delivers the complexity of a fermented wine. So you get that really good integrated flavour, but of course without the alcohol. And they've got really high quality ingredients, including premium green tea. So it's got a really lovely flavour. They've got the sparkling white and the sparkling rosé, and both use the same fermented grape base. But the sparkling rosé contains organic black carrot. Who'd have thought, right? Because black carrots have got this unusual sweetness to them and this sort of subtle spicy aftertaste, which of course are really nice characteristics for the sparkling rosé. So I thought that was inspired. It's just a great drink. Really good on its own. It's vegan, it's gluten-free, it's only 22 kcal per 100 ml, so super good for you. And you can have it, as I say, on its own in a nice champagne flute. Still annoys me why flutes and glasses have to be named by the liquid that goes in them, but you know what I mean, a flute. Or you can make a great alcohol-free mocktail, which is what I did the other day. You just need to check out bellandcobubbly.com, bellandcobubbly.com. And if you go to thesoberclub.com or to my sister site, imperfectlynatural.com, we've got a competition there as well to win some. So you can win a six-bottle case there of the Bell & Co. Sparkling 0%. So I'll put those links in the show notes for you as well, so you get a chance to do that. Don't forget about these great competitions. There's a bunch of competitions to win all kinds of stuff, you know, natural skincare and vitamins and supplements and a bunch of things. And so, you know, got to be in it to win it, right? It's got to be worth a try. My guest this week is William Porter. I mean, I've interviewed William so many times now, but I still love getting this logical piece. I mean, who doesn't love it just to have something explained again? And it doesn't matter if you already know this. I find that every time I chat to someone like William, who really has that fantastically logical approach, which counters my, my kind of fluffy out there, enthusiastic bit. He's much more calm and balanced, but he's really got that the logical piece. And I think it's just so important when we're making behaviour change to really understand what's going on. And he explains to us exactly what is wrong with alcohol. So pretty much everyone listening to this podcast will have heard of William Porter and will have heard of Alcohol Explained and Alcohol Explained too. But we actually invited him into the Sober Club. And he did an exclusive Q&A for us, which was super, super helpful. You covered some great things in there. But before we did that, I recorded this interview, so I thought I'd share it with you. Again, lots of our Sober Club members have been sober for, goodness, years, some of them 4 years. But we still like hearing this stuff again. If you are brand new, if you're just starting out day one or just doing Sober October, then I think you'll find this invaluable. And again, I'll put the links to William's books in the show notes. Enjoy. Okay. Thank you so much, William Porter, for joining us again. I know I've interviewed you so many times and we're old friends and all of that, but we love your wisdom. We love your wisdom. And also I must just say a huge thanks. I don't know if I've really chatted to you since my book came out, since Happy Healthy Sober came out, and your contributions to that were just fantastic, because I really wanted to cover all of the well-being stuff and all of my obviously share my own experience, and we've got stuff in there on all aspects of self-care and meditation and nutrition, but I really wanted somebody more logical than me to nail that initial piece. So, and you did it brilliantly. So I'm so grateful to you. If anyone hasn't read Happy, Healthy, Sober, then there's a couple of sections with that William has written for us directly for the book. So I appreciate it. Most people are aware of your books, William. You've done so fantastically well with them. Alcohol Explained and Alcohol Explained 2, and obviously Nicotine Explained and Diet Fitness Explained. I mean, you're just king of the explained.
All coming out, yeah.
just for anyone who sort of isn't across it, or maybe brand new to the podcast or whatever, just give us a real potted history of what led to you doing this, and particularly what led to you being able to write these books the way you have in such a kind of logical manner.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started drinking and smoking when I was about 14. to put that into context, I'm 45 now. So I think I was in my late teens when I came across Alan Carr's Quit Smoking book. Mm. And I found it really fascinating just because it was such a new logical approach to smoking. And I found it really interesting. I stopped smoking, but I carried on drinking for 25 years or so. And I kind of saw my own drinking escalate. Mm. And I guess I just took that kind of inquisitive and analytical view to my own drinking, at the same time kind of researching it. I suppose the one thing I could never accept was that, and you hear this quite a lot, that addiction is irrational, you can't rationalize it. And I could never quite get to grips with that, because to me, there was too many people addicted to things for it to be irrational. It may be that we at the time couldn't understand it, but to my mind, that didn't mean that it wasn't capable of being understood when you had all the right pieces in place.
Mm, yeah.
So I quit drinking in 2014, so 7.5 years ago or so now. So for me, it was understanding how all the pieces fit together that really provided the key for me to stopping.
Mm, yeah.
And a lot of other people, I think, because I think at the end of the day, when we, you quite often hear this with stopping drinking or stopping smoking, people say, well, make a list of all the reasons you want to stop, which is really good for motivating you. But of course, the problem isn't the reasons you want to stop. It's the reasons you want to continue.
Yeah.
Because for all we start to hate drinking and it causes all this downside, we still think, yes, but I could never go on holiday without a drink. I'm never going to enjoy social occasions without a drink. How am I going to get through Christmas without a drink?
Yeah.
And it's those that are the real issue. And I think when you start to break it down and understand it, you start to understand how a lot of those things are actually entirely false. Of course, you can go on holiday and have a wonderful time without alcohol and enjoy Christmas and enjoy social occasions and all of it. You just need that knowledge. And so I think for me and a lot of other people, it's that knowledge that really provides the key, if you like.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, what you explain really well in the book is what alcohol does to us. and that's the bit that it's surprisingly, you know, so many of us just haven't really cottoned on to. You know, we think there's something wrong with us.
Yeah.
We think we have an addictive personality, that there's something wrong with us. And then, of course, as I've said so many times before, you know, the society has brainwashed us into thinking that there are only two types of drinkers. There are those who are genuinely, you know, at rock bottom, really do need alcohol services, clinically dependent. And most of us know we're not that.
Yeah.
So then we think, well, there must be something really wrong then, because I'm not that, but I'm not okay and I can't stop. And it's seemingly everyone else is perfectly fine. Of course, what we don't realize at that point is that there are millions of people who are not fine at all. It's just that it's taboo. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to share it. And one of the reasons is because we are beating ourselves up, we're blaming ourselves, and we've missed that really important piece that you explained so well, which is that it's the alcohol that is super bad for us and super addictive. It's just that we've all been told it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. The interesting dynamic with alcohol is drug addiction comes about when your subconscious links cause with effect.
Yeah.
And the cause we're talking about is taking the drug. So either smoking it or injecting it or snorting it, or in the case of alcohol, drinking it. And the effect is when it hits your bloodstream. Now, in terms of speed, when things hit your bloodstream, the quickest way of getting a drug into your bloodstream is to inject it, obviously. Secondly, to inhale it or snort it, it takes about a second. But when you drink it, it takes about 15, 20 minutes for it to hit your bloodstream. So there's quite a long period. So consequently, as opposed to smoking or, you know, heroin or something, you can drink for quite a few years before you come fully addicted to it.
Yeah.
So that really confuses things, because we tend to look around and see all these people who can seemingly take it or leave it. And we think, well, that must be the natural state with alcohol.
Yeah.
And somehow there's something wrong with us, because we don't fit into that. We want to keep having it. When we have one, we find it very hard to not have the next one.
Yeah.
But actually, that's nonsense. It's just the people who can have one or two just haven't yet become addicted to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So just remind us then, again, for anyone who might be new to all of this, what does alcohol do to us? Let's just be really clear about that, because I know you have a very good way of explaining the way that we kind of, you know, we drink and then we have this awful kind of anxiety thing, and then we drink again. Just explain that to anybody who's you know, maybe not heard you say it before.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So alcohol, it's a sedative. So it's a depressant. When I use the term depressant, I'm using it in its chemical sense. So something that decreases or inhibits nerve activity.
Yeah.
Which is why when you drink, you tend to feel more relaxed afterwards. The problem really comes in because the human brain is reactive, and it reacts when you put drugs inside yourself. Now, the human brain creates and excretes a whole range of different drugs, chemicals, and hormones. And there's a myriad number of these. But what essentially the brain does, it works by something called homeostasis, which is a delicate chemical balance of all these different chemicals, drugs, and hormones. Now, when you introduce something like alcohol, which is a sedative, your brain tries to counter that. So it does it in lots of different ways. It releases something called cortisol, it releases adrenaline. These are stimulants, and it releases them to try and counteract the sedating effects of the alcohol. It does it in lots of other ways as well, but I think the easiest way to think about it is just your brain becomes hypersensitive.
Yeah.
So it can work under the sedating effects of the alcohol. The problem kicks in when the alcohol wears off, because you're left with that oversensitization phase. And it leaves you feeling slightly out of sorts, slightly anxious, and not feeling particularly good. Now, of course, the quickest way to rectify that is to take another drink. There's actually two ways you can get rid of that feeling. One is to just wait a few days until the brain chemistry gets back to normal. But a far quicker way of doing it is to take another drink because the brain's geared up to work under the sedating effects of the alcohol, but the alcohol has disappeared. So you put more alcohol into yourself and you're just correcting that balance and going back to feeling normal.
Yeah.
A way a lot of people can relate to it is sometimes just to make an analogy. If you're driving a car and say you're driving along a nice straight flat road and you want to keep the car at exactly 30 miles an hour. So you have your foot, a very specific amount pushed down on the accelerator, and you're going along quite happily at 30 miles an hour. Now, if you suddenly, the road ends and you hit a load of mud and wet grass, the vehicle will slow down, even though your foot's still pushed down the same amount of the accelerator. So to get back up to 30 miles an hour, you've got to push more and more down on the accelerator. The problem is then when you come off the wet grass and mud and go back onto the tarmac, you fly ahead and the vehicle rushes out of control. And that's essentially what you're doing with your brain when you drink alcohol. It becomes oversensitive and then the alcohol wears off and you have that unpleasant feeling left.
And of course, you know, one of the things I talk about a lot is that this is why it's so important when you do stop drinking that you focus on, you know, for the mindset piece, you focus on what you're gaining and how much better life is going to be. But also at the same time, it's super important to try and balance that brain chemistry in other ways, because, you know, as you say, the suddenly the dopamine's not coming in, you know, your body's screaming, where's my fix? And we need to find other ways. We need to eat really well. We need to do other things that lift us, that, you know, soothe us, as it were. So it's super important to sort of focus on that piece. But just remind us then, for anyone who's kind of going through the early stages, I mean, you know, we've got the Sober for October thing going on. There will be some people who are, you know, right at the very beginning of this kind of experience. So for those people, the question I'm always being asked is, well, how long will I feel bad for?
So the brain chemistry, there's a few different things that need to go on here. One of them is, so when you first quit, you can expect for the first few days to feel kind of a bit anxious. You can also expect to find sleeping difficult if you're a regular drinker. Yeah. Now, that's partly to do with the oversensitization, but partly to do with something else. When human beings start getting towards bedtime, their brain starts to close things down and you become sleepy and you drift off into a natural sleep. Now, when you drink alcohol, your brain stops going through that process because it relies on the alcohol to close things down because alcohol is a sedative.
Yeah.
So as you drink daily, your brain stops going through that closing down, winding down to sleep process and just relies on the alcohol. So when you first quit, for the first few days, you can expect to feel quite anxious anyway with that chemistry still writing itself, but you can also expect to find sleep quite difficult, which again goes back to what you were saying, which is why it's very important to, you know, do the correct things, diet, maybe meditation, a bit of exercise, because that all helps you to get back to sleep into a normal sleeping pattern.
Carry on.
So that usually lasts for a few days. And then when you go out of that, you can sometimes find that you get extremely tired. So the first few days you find it, you're anxious, you can't sleep. And then after that, you go the other way.
Yeah.
Essentially what that is, when you're drinking regularly, i.e. every day, your brain is almost constantly in that oversensitization phase because it takes 36, 48 hours for it to get back to normal. And if you're drinking daily, it never quite gets back to normal. So when you finally quit, it's the first time your brain's come out of that oversensitization stage for however many years or decades you've been drinking for. It's the equivalent as if you're drinking lots of strong coffee every day and you suddenly cut it out. So you can expect to feel tired for, and again, it's hard to put a finger on it, but it's usually maximum of 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, you've got all the other things kicking in as well, haven't you? You know, with the cravings and you know, your brain telling you it's not fair, everyone else is drinking and et cetera.
Yeah.
But let's assume for a moment, you know, that someone is doing a sober October or a dry January. you know, I'm sure you'd agree with me that far better to focus on, you know, what they're going to be gaining. But actually, 4 weeks, it isn't quite long enough, really, is it?
No, I mean, I kind of think with drinking, it's like one of those cumulative graphs that you get a lot of benefits early on. So it's almost like a curve, if you like. So you get massive benefits early on, but they continue to accrue for quite a long period afterwards. Mm. I mean, I found my diet changed massively after about the 3 month mark. And I know a lot of other people have found that as well. Now, that's an interesting one because alcohol actually stops you being able to absorb certain key vitamins and minerals. With the result that you're constantly low on these vitamins, which is one of the reasons drinkers tend to eat a lot, because your body triggers feelings of hunger, not only when you're low on calories, i.e. available energy, but when you're low on vitamins. Now, the problem with drinking is the alcohol actually stops you being able to absorb those vitamins, so you're constantly low. Mm. Now, apparently, when you start taking vitamins, you need to wait a 3 month period for it to build up to the correct level within your body. So personally, I found after that 3 month period, it was quite interesting. My desire for certain fast foods and certain foods just kind of disappeared a bit.
Mm, because obviously one of the issues is that a lot of people get such a sugar head on at the beginning.
Yes.
You know, as the alcohol is wearing off and certainly yeah. because that's sort of part of us that wants the sweetness in our life, you know, we're not getting the alcohol anymore. So we get the raging sugar cravings. I mean, what's your advice? What's your top tip for that?
I generally say to people one thing at a time.
Yeah.
So if you're quitting drinking, cut yourself some slack. And if you have a few extra chocolate bars or whatever it is you're doing to help you through the first few days, don't worry too much about it. But I generally caveat that advice because for me, eating a lot of refined sugar is kind of akin to drinking, not quite as extreme, but it's something that we constantly go back to that ultimately is actually unpleasant and frustrating. And usually we find that if we can cut it out entirely, we live a better quality of life overall. I generally say to people, if it's in the first week or two, don't worry too much about it. There will come a time where you kind of think, right, I've done the drinking, I'm through certainly the early phases, now I want to concentrate on sugar, smoking, whatever else it is, because we humans are ambitious. We like to keep improving our lives. So what happens is the biggest problem a lot of us have is with our alcohol.
Yeah.
So we cut that out. And then after a week or two, a month, whatever, we think, right, that's good. But then we're ambitious. We want to improve more. So we look at the next thing and it might be sugar or so. I do genuinely think you will naturally start to look at the next things.
Well, I think also, you know, what most of us realize that actually the alcohol piece is the big one. When we do that and, you know, when we've done that bit properly, you know, it's like, how badass are you really? You know, you can do anything if you can do that. And you become so much more resilient and so pleased with yourself. And so you should be that from that place. Yes, you absolutely can tackle the smoking or the sugar or the whatever other, you know, bad habit or behavior change you want to make from that place, because you can kind of come back to who you really are, you know. And I think that's just such a massive gift of ditching the booze, is that you can actually get back to the real you again, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's so many aspects of this that we could talk about. I know that one Sober Club member wanted to ask you, I know it's a slight side issue, but you know, one of the things that happens to us, you know, when we stop drinking is that we can no longer numb out effectively. So if we have been using alcohol to, you know, just get away from stuff for a while, you know, get away from stress, anxiety, whatever's going on in our lives. We can't do that anymore. We don't have that crutch anymore. And so it is going to come back to having to be willing to sit with our emotions, right? And most of us are not very good at that because we've never done it. You know, for years, we've numbed out all the big stuff. So we're really not very good at kind of accepting, okay, right, well, so I've got this thing going on at the moment. It's called anger, or it's called frustration, or, you know, I mean, even just, you know, my little episode that I had tonight where I got the Zoom link wrong, it's entirely my error.
And I've probably had a total meltdown over that, you know, while I was drinking. I mean, absolute meltdown. So that would have meant going and having another drink, you know. But the truth of it is we don't handle stress terribly well. And then when we stop drinking, we don't have those coping mechanisms and we're not able to sit with the emotions. What would be your top tips there?
I would say... There's two things. Firstly, when you do quit drinking, your brain chemistry comes back to normal. One of the biggest gains you get is to get your mental resilience and your strength of character back. Now, you might not think you're a particularly confident or resilient person, but I guarantee you'll be a lot more confident and resilient than when you're drinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So firstly, what I found was there was a lot more stress you can deal with that previously you couldn't deal with.
Yeah.
The second thing is... and it kind of brings us back to, you know, eating a lot of refined sugar. I think everyone deserves and needs a coping mechanism. So there will be problems that come in and you can think, fine, I'm going to deal with this as opposed to just sit and numb it out. But for all of us, there will be things that you can't do anything about. There might be things that you genuinely can't do anything about, like the death of a loved one or you're losing your job or something, or stuff that just hits you at the wrong time and you just haven't got the energy to deal with it on that particular day, whatever that might be.
Mm.
So that's where we come to trying to get into place some different coping mechanisms other than drinking.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very personal thing. For me, I love reading. And I find when I'm in a good book, it does really what alcohol should have done, which is take my mind off my problems because I'm lost in whatever I'm reading. The other thing I personally like doing is exercise, because I find when I'm out exercising, again, my brain kind of turns off a bit and I'm just going through the motor reactions, whatever it might be. Of course, when you exercise, your brain releases endorphins anyway, so you do feel better afterwards.
Yeah.
But I think I kind of, to be honest, Jenny, I think this is more your area, because that's the thing. I think alcohol explains alcohol, whereas your book's much more all encompassing.
Yeah. No, I just think it's interesting. Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I do. I'm a very big believer that everyone really needs to know what their own resources are. And you know, I mean, it's ridiculous, but most of us don't when we're drinking.
No,
we don't.
No, no.
You know, for me, my idea of self-care was more wine, you know, and I had no idea what else worked for me, really.
No.
Or at least if I did, I wasn't prioritizing it. That's the important thing. And I think, you know, we would both agree that the important thing is to prioritize those soothing things that you can do, that the, you know, whatever it is you can do that's a resource for you that can help kind of recharge your batteries. And as you say, sometimes it just is a case of take your mind off the goddamn drink for a while.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah. I think it'd be interesting, but a lot of people, I say to them, what did you used to do before you drank?
Mm.
And often, I mean, a lot of us, we start drinking when we're teenagers,
yeah,
and maybe going back about too far. But most of us had hobbies or things we enjoyed doing
yeah.
that we put to one side because we started spending our spare time drinking.
Exactly.
Whereas
absolutely.
Actually, you can go back to those. And really, what all you're looking for is something that you enjoy doing enough that it just you forget about whatever it is you're worrying about. Now, reading, exercise, even a film, talking to friends, whatever it might be.
Mm.
But I think it is vitally important to get these coping mechanisms in place, because, you know, we're talking about how much better you feel when you stop drinking, which you do, but you still have bad days. Everybody has bad days.
Yeah.
And so I think you need these mechanisms in place, because what you don't want to do is wait until you've had a really obnoxious day and then think, I haven't got a drink. What do I do to cope with it?
And that's where the connection piece is so important as well. Being able to connect with other people, you know, who feel the same way. So you don't feel so alone. I think when you feel really alone, that's when you kind of retreat within yourself. And that's when you hit that old sod it button, you know, I may as well just drink again. In the Sober Club, and also in Happy Healthy Sober, you did a great explanation for us of cravings and what they actually are. Can you just sum it up for us again in a paragraph or something? Because again, there'll
absolutely.
Be people who are thinking, oh yeah, but it's all right for you talking about, but you don't realize I've got a craving from hell.
So cravings are quite an interesting one. A lot of people kind of think of cravings like something external that hits us and you just have to sit and suffer through it. Mm. But actually cravings are a very specific conscious thought process.
Yeah.
And what happens is the thought of a drink enters our head And what we start doing is two things, really. We start fantasizing about it. So we start going through this fantasy of how great it would feel to have that drink. And we start almost teasing ourselves with the possibility of it. So we start going through this, oh, it would be so nice to have it. And I could just have one on this occasion, or, you know, like you said, you hit the sod it button. Mm. I just don't care. I just want to have that drink. So, but what we're doing is two things. We're teasing ourselves with the fantasy and making that teasing even more acute by thinking, oh, yeah, I could actually have one. Because when something's within our grasp, it's that much more difficult to say no to it.
Mm. And also, it's the thing we've always done, right? So our unconscious mind will throw back so many associations and happy memories that once we're on a roll with that thought, we keep recreating it, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of becomes almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because let me give an example. So I was in the office today and it wasn't a particularly good day. And you come home and you think, you know what, I just want to relax, have a meal and put the TV on or read a book or whatever it is. Now, coming home from a bad day at work and relaxing with a meal or a TV or a book or whatever is something inherently enjoyable. Okay, so you're taking your mind off what happened and just winding down a bit. But if you're there thinking, wouldn't it be so nice if I could have a drink? And this is not enough. I really want a drink. Suddenly you're not relaxing. You're not paying attention to the meal. You're not paying any attention to the book or the TV or whatever it is you're supposed to be doing, because you're obsessing with this internal, like, tantrum, almost argument with yourself. So when you do finally give in, or if you finally give in and have a drink, of course it's wonderful because you suddenly feel completely relaxed and happy. But the alcohol's just been a placebo.
Exactly.
All it's done is remove that unpleasant mental conundrum that you're obsessing about and then release your brain up so that you can then think, actually, this is a nice meal and this is a good book, although I'm enjoying the TV or talking to my friends or whatever it might be.
Particularly if, as you say, you know, you can put the pause in and you can actually remember or remind yourself that alcohol is actually a shit, you know. Yeah, the emperor's not wearing any clothes. So you're fantasizing over something that is really shit. So, you know, how about changing the thought process?
Yeah.
Yeah,
precisely.
What else did I want to ask you? I know somebody was asking me, you know, what would be, again, and I'm just interested in your view on this, because when you with alcohol, this is something we can only do for ourselves and we have to go through this ourselves. But what about when someone else in your life is drinking, in inverted commas, too much? How do you handle that?
So that is, I have to plead that I've never actually been in that situation. So I'm married. My wife drinks, but sparingly. She hardly ever touches it. And when she does, she'll have like half a glass. She's one of those people who will normie. Well, I think abnormal. In my experience, the vast majority of drinkers don't drink like this. They enjoy.
So she actually has an off switch.
Yeah, completely. In that it's usually off, in that she'll have a glass and then half the time she forgets about it, doesn't even finish it. Which I think what it really comes down to is just doesn't really enjoy drinking that much. So out of the two of us, I was the heavy drinker. So I've not actually been in a relationship with someone drinking very heavily. I mean, obviously I go out a lot, and there's always people drinking and always people drinking heavily. I find it solidifies my decision not to drink, because I think one of the big myths is that drinking is really good fun. And I think that's a misunderstanding, because what you usually find is the first couple of drinks may feel good because they're relieving that unpleasant feeling caused by the previous
scratching
drink.
That itch. Yeah.
Or for people like me who didn't drink regularly and just like a weekend drinker, I would still not enjoy my Friday nights without a drink, but that was because of the craving cycle. Yeah. So I was just sat there thinking, oh, I wish I could have a drink. So I wasn't really concentrating on enjoying myself. So I always find it very interesting to go out socializing with people drinking, because they appear quite buoyant after the first couple of drinks, but then after an hour or so, they don't look particularly happy.
It all goes downhill.
Absolutely. So I personally, I know a lot of people say, oh, it's difficult to be around drinkers, it makes you want to drink, but I don't find that. I think if you look at them really honestly and see what they're actually going through, I don't think it's a particularly attractive thing to do. It just doesn't make me want to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I personally, you know, think that if you've got, if there's someone in your else in your life, you know, who's kind of drinking too much, I think really you can only start with yourself. And you know, I have seen it happen a lot of times that when one person stops drinking and just really nails it and doesn't nag the other, doesn't really talk about it very much. In fact, I recommend that you don't actually talk about it too much at all, because you've got to share this with people who get it, right? But then at some point later down the line, you start to become this, well, you just sort of shine a light and often, not in every case, of course, but often the other people around you kind of think, wow, I want some of what she's having, you know, because it is infectious. You know, when you see people who are suddenly, you know, just kind of your energy changes when you're not drinking and there's something really infectious and attractive about that.
It's an interesting dynamic, and I think you're absolutely right, because I think the best thing you can do is, for example, go out and enjoy yourself without a drink.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, how they see alcohol is, yes, I'm tired all the time, and yeah, I get hungover because I tend to drink too much. So there's all these downsides to it, but I have to do it because how on earth would I enjoy a night out without drinking? But then if they go out and they see someone completely sober enjoying themselves, that can be really powerful, because then their thought process is, well, actually, if I can go out and enjoy myself without drinking, why on earth do I have to put up with all this downside?
Exactly.
I can get rid of everything.
Exactly. It really is that focusing on what you're gaining rather than what you're giving up, in inverted commas, which is nothing. So what would your top tips be then, maybe three, for someone who is at the start of the journey, or maybe doing Sober October or some other month, or, you know, or just struggling at the moment, maybe their third or fourth time around the block? Because let's not forget, many of us don't crack this first time around. And I spoke to someone today who is kind of beating herself up because she's been around the block and relapsed, in inverted commas. I hate that word, but, you know, started drinking again. So back to another day one. It's very common. I mean, I'm not recommending it, but it's common, right?
Yeah, it is one of the things. And there's always a bit of dilemma with the advice, because on the one hand, there is no point keep beating yourself up over it.
Yeah.
But equally, there has to be some accountability. Otherwise, it's too easy to just keep through that cycle.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of top tips, one for me would be understanding. And when I'm talking about understanding, because going back to what I was talking about before, so much of what we believe about alcohol is actually false.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can really get to grips when you start to understand the science and how the human brain works. You know, we've talked about cravings, we've talked about daily drinking, where that wonderful feeling you get from the drink is no more than it just calming that over anxiety that you've had from the previous ones.
Yeah.
But fitting all that together, I think, is intensely powerful, not only because it provides even more positives, but because it actually, what I was talking about before, all the reasons that you might think, I want to continue drinking, start to evaporate.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a weighing scales, where you've got your reasons to drink and reasons to not drink. For me, understanding increases the reasons to not drink and completely demolishes the reasons we think we're going to struggle to give up, the reasons we want to continue drinking.
Yeah.
I think the second point I would say is, it does take a few days. So if you are in the first few days, that is the worst bit, because I think this is something a lot of people, you know, they stop drinking and they don't feel good. They can't sleep. They feel restless and they think, this
wasn't worth
my life.
Yeah, exactly.
They just see this stretching out for the next however many years until they die. Of course it isn't. Your brain chemistry gets back to normal. You start sleeping better. It gets massively better. It's astounding. So I would think, I would say, don't think that these first few days are typical of sobriety. You have to go through a dip to come out of the other side.
Definitely. Yeah. Brilliant. No, it's absolutely true. Thank you. I appreciate it. I really appreciate it, William, and your books are just absolutely amazing. And you share so much, you know, so much positivity, as well as, you know, this absolute logic piece. So and also, you know, I know we haven't got really time to get big time into it now, but you must be really proud of the Diet and Fitness Explained as well, because, you know, you really have nailed that, some real basics in there.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully there's bits in there that aren't in other diet books. Mm. And I genuinely think there's, because I've had a few people who have been like dietitians and they've read the book and they've said, I'll read it, but I don't think there's going to be anything in there for me.
Mm.
And they've said, actually, there was a few things that really made me stop and think.
So, yeah, definitely. I mean, I thought your explanation of rehydration was really interesting. I found that fascinating. You know, you're talking about how much water we should drink and I'll leave people to read it for themselves, but I thought it was fascinating. And again, you just do that very logical approach rather than, oh, you know what, I think I'll trot out the same as every other magazine and tell everyone they have to drink 8 glasses of filtered water a day. Well, not necessarily. I thought it was great. Anyways, thank you, William. I really appreciate it.
So check the show notes for the info about William's books. He won an award in my Platinum Awards recently. I mean, seriously, they're great. They're great books. I'm also very grateful, as I said, to William for writing pieces for my book, for writing a couple of chapters for Happy, Healthy, Sober. That was just great to have him do that explanation of exactly what alcohol does to us, particularly, you know, what happens when we first withdraw. It was really, really, really helpful. Don't forget, if you would like to be connected, and it is such a big part of this, the Sober Club is low cost. It's non-judgmental. It's super supportive. And it really makes a massive difference. There is a massive member portal of content, including expert Zoom sessions. And I've got 3 videos on cravings, in fact, with William, for example. But there's a whole bunch of stuff in there and we're adding to it all the time. There's lots of connection going on. So if that's something that you'd be interested in, if you want to really level up your optimum health and well-being, then do check out thesoberclub.com. If you want to meet in person, then we have a Sober by the Sea on November the 6th, Saturday, November the 6th in Southend and Essex. I know it won't be sunny or anything. Well, it might be. I mean, it won't be hot, obviously. But, you know, it doesn't matter. The sea has a different kind of energy in winter. And we'll have a great day. And it's going to be creating a vision board and visioning the new you. So check that out. Again, go to thesoberclub.com, click on events. And there's a few spaces left for that very, very small, intimate kind of one day afternoon and evening event on Saturday, November the 6th. And then if you'd like to come to Champneys, I think there are some spaces on our retreat in November, November the 20th at Champneys in Tring. And I know I've been saying it for months, but I really am plotting and planning to do something outside of the Southeast, because I do recognise we're very Southeast centric at the moment, which is driving Sober Club members bonkers who are up in different parts of the country or in Scotland. It'd be great to do something in Scotland. I'd love to do that. Anyways, it's all up for grabs. Do let me know what you've enjoyed about the podcast. You know, if there's something that's, you know, really struck a chord with you. It's all about those little light bulb aha moments, and I'd love to know what they are for you. Also, if there are other episodes that you've really enjoyed, do please let us know. Big thanks to Bell & Co. for that cocktail making workshop and for being part of this podcast. It's so appreciated. Make sure you check out the competition to win a case of the Bell & Co. Sparkling 0%. And I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.